Welcome to the Encouragement Now podcast with licensed professional counselor Kevin Phillips, personal growth life coach Laura Donnie, and pastoral care and peer counselor Joseph Herrera. Father, I thank you for this day. I thank you for the time to be able to come together. And Lord, we have a subject on our hearts that we're going to talk about. I pray that you would help us to see not only what we're talking about is good, but also how we can educate, but also learn and be able to take those tools to help us in our lives. We thank you, Lord, in your name. Amen.
Amen.
Well, welcome back. We are starting another episode talking about a thing that probably most of you have heard about, and it's called ADHD. And I have Laura and Kevin here with me, and I wanted to first welcome, say hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
But I wanted to give this over to Kevin. Kevin is our licensed professional counselor, and he has a lot of experience with people who have ADHD. And so I wanted us to kind of peer into the mind of a counselor, not only what ADHD is all about, but what tools we can use with people that have it, or if we have it ourselves, and take the responsible route when it comes to being diagnosed. So, Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm well, Joseph, and I hope you are. Laura, it's good to be with you again. I had a little vacation time, and thank you guys for taking the podcast last week. It's good to be back in the saddle here. Laura, in our pre-talk before the we started recording the podcast, asked a good question. She said, what's the difference in ADHD and ADD? And a lot of people will come to me, and they'll tell me that they have been diagnosed with ADD and so on. ADD was an acronym for attention deficit disorder. And with the newer DSMs, or the Diagnostic Statistical Manual on Mental Health Disorders, I know that's a mouthful. That's the reason we call it DSM. That is pretty much the physician's desk reference, if you will, or therapist's reference for how to diagnose and so on. The newer versions are calling it ADHD. It's the same diagnosis, but again, the ADD stands for attention deficit disorder, but what we have found with additional research that it also includes hyperactivity. So the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So it's not only including the old ADD with the attention deficit, but also the hyperactivity part of it. So it's the same diagnosis. It's just evolved into the new term ADHD and so on. So I hope that clears up any confusion. So now we call it ADHD and so on. And then ADHD can manifest itself in some people are just inattention and some people are just hyperactive, but usually it's a combination of both of those. And ADHD is a combination of the inattention, as I mentioned, the hyperactivity and impulsivity. Inattention can manifest as difficulty with focus, careless mistakes, forgetfulness. While hyperactivity may present as restlessness, excessive talking, or constant movement, and then impulsivity can be seen as like blurting out answers, interrupting others, or acting without thinking, and that sort of thing. So those are the hallmark overarching symptoms, and then we can get into the details of what this looks like in terms of behavioral. But it affects a lot of children. I think a lot of adults too, but it's typically picked up in children when they start going to school and they can't pay attention or they can't settle down, then people start saying ADHD. But there's a whole line of medications that are used that I don't think is healthy for children. There are stimulants like Adderall and the Ativans and the Vyvanses and all that, sometimes necessary, but there's a whole line of herbal supplements that people can take for their children, and some changes in the family unit in terms of the routines and so on. For example, children who have been diagnosed with ADHD or who are being challenged with ADHD don't need to have a bunch of stimulation, whether it's movies or gaming or a lot of stimulation a couple hours before they go to bed, because it will disrupt them. It will not allow them to sleep properly. And so that's a family change. The whole family has to have a efficacious bedtime routine so sleep can be achieved and so on, and that predictability and that routine. And so it not only involves the person who has it, but it's a family thing.
Yeah. I would imagine that nutrition must play a huge role in this diagnosis. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Caffeine, you know, our drinks, our sodas, our energy drinks, and whatever else that children consumed are either filled with caffeine or just filled with incredible amounts of sugar. And that just exacerbates that. And I've also seen a lot of my patients will come to me with ADHD being assigned by the school counselor because they can't pay attention in class and they're falling asleep in class or not interested. They're intelligent. That's well evident, but they are not doing well with their academia. And a lot of it is because they're brain tired. They're not getting enough sleep. But the sugar and the caffeine really exacerbates it and drives it as well. You know, when I was a child back in the 70s, we didn't have this diagnosis. Now, I only remember one friend who seemed to be off the charts as far as hyperactivity, but usually the kids weren't that way. But it was a different lifestyle. We were able to get out in the fields and the woods and just get exhausted because we played so hard. But it's a different kind of culture now where the kids are not able to expend as much energy. And so is it a energy just bound up in children and without them having to physically express that? Or is it truly a mental psychological thing?
Yeah. And one of the things that I hear a lot is like somebody will say, oh, I have ADHD, I'm self-diagnosed, or they may say I'm ADHD because they saw a lot of the symptoms and they've kind of tied themselves to that. What do you find that there are people that when they go to you, they say that? And what is your approach to them when it comes to ADHD?
Well, I will ask why they think that and what symptomology displays that. And then I will take them through an ADHD assessment tool that's about 80 questions, and it will tell me beyond any shadow of doubt whether they have it or not. And so inattention, we have to be careful. A lot of physicians will get this wrong. They'll have a patient who comes to them and says, hey, boy, I just can't concentrate. And they will put them on a ADHD medication, which is usually a stimulant and can be addictive. But what we have to keep in mind, physicians are a necessary part of our team, but they're not the experts in mental health. That inattention can be a symptom of another diagnosis. And so oftentimes when they give them medication for the ADHD and not having the expertise or the time to really dig into it, then that medication will even exacerbate that inattention and drive some other symptoms. If that's the case, then they pretty much have another diagnosis. But people come to me with ADHD as a badge of honor sometimes. It's almost like, yeah, I got ADHD, so I have an excuse. I have a legitimate excuse. I don't have to pay attention, or I can't do good grades, or and so on. It could be copycatting. Their sibling or their friend has ADHD, and they're getting a lot of attention from the school counselors to preferential treatment in classes, to preferential seating. So some of it's copycatting, honestly. Some of it is a convenient excuse. Oh, I can't pay attention. No, I can't do that. Or I can't, it comes across as a convenient excuse. And so different people are different ways. I'm not saying everybody is this way. I think it's created by our enemy. Anything that's short of the ideal of ideal behavior comes from our enemy trying to screw us up. And so we can look around at our society and know that through social media and everything from news to whatever is given to us in nanobytes of information. So that diet, so to speak, our social media diet is almost driving and creating these short attention bursts. And I think our whole culture is designed to do that. And I think it's not by accident. I think our enemy doesn't want us being able to concentrate on things so that we're not concentrating on proper relationships or proper conversations or proper family dynamics, which takes some attention. But if he can get us all blitzed out and not being able to pay attention and concentrate on those things, then I think it's created by our enemy. So as the overall arching kind of principle. I don't know if I answered your question, Joseph, but yes, I have people coming to me all the time with the ADHD badge of honor, and I got this, and when they really could have something else. Could be a family systems problem, could be a not getting an adequate sleep problem, it could be a nutrition problem that Laura pointed out. It's just so many facets to this.
Well, what I think is fascinating that you're talking about is that the enemy can be behind it, but we have to remember, and I shouldn't say but, and we need to remember we're body, soul, and spirit. And so I love how you say it takes a deeper dive into looking at what could be exacerbating or creating even this diagnosis. You know, when you were talking about, you know, we as children, we're coming from a generation where a lot of us ran barefoot. And the first thing that came to my mind was grounding. Like that is a, you know, that's not a woo-woo, you know, hippie term, right? Grounding is actually a way that God designed us to discharge, right? Whether it's on sand or ground or grass, right? To be able to release, you know, certain electrical charges, you might say, that build up in the body, you know, fresh air, sunlight, right? When I say fresh air, we think about what are most of us breathing in? Recirculated air. And then we think about fresh food. You know, a few, you know, decades back, everything for the most part was fresh, right? And, you know, now we've got fast food and processed food, and we're building little bodies, right? With these things, these artificial things, right? There's no fresh air, no grounding, no sunshine, right? And like you say, there's so much stimulus. And, you know, when you talked about sleep, it's true that across the board, it's so underestimated how powerful it is. I have a five-year-old, a granddaughter who's getting ready to be six. And her mother and I had a conversation, and her mother was shocked to realize. Now, she's a great mom, but it shocked her to realize that this little powerhouse of a five-year-old needs about 10 hours sleep a night. And, you know, parents don't often think about how children, that their bones are growing, their organs are growing, their teeth are growing, right? Her liver's growing. And I said, you know, the one thing about children, predominantly when they get up, they're up and they move and they keep going until they quote unquote collapse, right? Mm-hmm. And so I created this system for when she spends the night with us that 7 o'clock, everything gets shut down. We start to, you know, take our time. We start to get ready for bed. And by 7:30, she's tucked into bed. It's very calm. It's very quiet, right? And what a difference. Even a five-year-old can say, I like going to bed early. Now, she doesn't have ADHD. However, she's got a lot of energy. So maybe sometimes, you know, children are dealing with tired brains that you talked about, Kevin. How many of our kids are getting 6 hours sleep, 7 hours sleep, when what their body requires is 10 hours sleep, maybe 11 hours, because their bodies are literally growing in front of our eyes?
Mm-hmm. I had a patient one time, this may add some color. He was 14 years old, and his school counselor, God bless school counselors, I'm not saying anything disparagingly about them, but they said, hey, you have ADHD, you need to go see a counselor. And lo and behold, when I started asking about his life and their family habits and what he does before he goes to bed and this and that, he was using his phone up until about 12 or 1 o'clock every night. And so knowing that the mind is still stimulated a couple hours after reading or seeing things that are stimulating and fast action and so on, he probably, I don't know if he was achieving REM sleep, but he probably wasn't getting into the deeper sleep patterns until about 3 o'clock in the morning. And he had to wake up 6:30 to get ready to be at high school, 7:30, 7:45 kind of thing. And so when I noticed that, I said, well, look, man, you may not be ADHD, you may be brain tired. And so I think we can quickly diagnose somebody with ADHD too quickly and over-medicate and all that, when really it's just a habitual sort of thing and a behavioral change as far as the solution. So I told him, look, it was during football season. This was several years ago. And I was like, I like football. So I watch a lot of football. Not anymore, but I used to. So I said, I tell you what, you turn your phone in to your parents at 7:30 and don't look at any more stimulating videos or the TikToks or the things that stir you up and so on, the action-packed stuff. And I will quit watching football. And we'll make an agreement, and we'll do that. As long as you do it, I'll do it. And so he agreed to it. We shook hands, and I only violated my promise like for 2 minutes in a restaurant. My wife and I went to a restaurant, and they had this like football game on. It's like I was trying to keep my eyes away from it. It was right there in front of me, but I did an overall good job because I respected this guy, and I respect when I give my word. But he came back a week and a half, and he said, "Yeah, I did pretty good for a week and a half." And boy, he relapsed too. But the point is, and I liked the little fella. He was a neat little guy, a winner. He was a Christian and just a outstanding little man. But sometimes it's just sleep deprivation and not getting the proper sleep.
Yeah, one of the things that I like to ask is, what time do you go to sleep? Right.
Yep.
And because that being brain tired, you know, you're robbing yourself not only of the rest, but you're also robbing your body of its time to be able to process fats and other things when you, 'cause we're putting food in our bodies, and our sleep time is when our body goes into overdrive to start working on fats and breaking down of foods and storing energy and doing all that. And so what we're doing is we're throwing off our natural rhythmic cycle for being able to have the energy and to be healthy. I think, too, our environment is a big thing. And I don't know, you know, it could be by design, but I love education, but I have this love hate of the way our education system is today, because I find that some kids have to get up at 5-6 o'clock in the morning just to get out to stand there and wait for a bus. And then they have to take the bus ride. Then they're at school for 8 hours, and then they have to take the bus back, and then they have homework. And at that point, it's like, I don't, when I worked a job and I was working overtime, I wasn't working nearly that hard for that amount of time. And I'm exhausted and I want to escape and do something else. And then we send our kids home with homework that they have to do. And then there's we're training them to, oh, if you don't meet our expectations, then you're failing, and then they feel like they're failures. There's the system, I think, is working against us. It's not to say that we can't work in the system, but I think we have to understand the system and do things to the best of our abilities. But I think the system is creating a lot of the problems that it's trying to solve. And, you know, my personal, you know, this is just me. The reason why we do school the way we do it is because teachers have to make a living. And you have to justify how much you pay them. And so we have to have the certain amount of hours that the kids have to do. And I like learning. I like, you know, education. The problem is that I think it's hurting a lot of kids in that method. That's just me.
Joseph, I hear you saying when we report to homeroom, we should immediately have a recess.
Yeah.
and then when we get back from recess, we should have lunch, right? Maybe right. A couple of classes in the afternoon. But I hear what you're saying. That makes a lot of sense, to be honest with you, that is the structure is sort of defeating kids and teaching them to be disinterested in some of that methodology. You know, kind of goes against them. They need to expend energy. They need to be creative. They need some interaction.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other part of it too is, it's, you can't take a system that has to take millions of kids and make it personal, right? It has to be broad. And you know, I grew up, I hated school. So I dealt a lot with daydreaming. So when I was in school, in elementary school, I was failing. I was daydreaming a lot. And the reason, the very first memory of me daydreaming was my very first day of kindergarten. Mm. And I got out of the car, had I remember I had my backpack, I had my school uniform, and I went and stood in line because somebody said, you need to stand right here. And before I know it, I was the only one standing in the parking lot. I was looking around going, where did everybody go? And then I had to go find my classroom. It's funny that nobody saw me standing there daydreaming. And, and come to find out, my dad dealt with that too. And so he said, we have to learn how to learn. We have to find systems to be able to help us to learn. And through that experience, even though I hated elementary school, I got through schooling the best I could. I passed. That's the key, is that I passed. But through that experience, I actually learned how to learn, and that actually helped me to become a better teacher. Because if I could teach myself, I could teach someone else. And so sometimes we think what is our greatest weakness could actually become our greatest source of knowledge and power to be able to make us better. But we didn't have, I don't think we had ADD as a diagnosis in the early 80s, or stuff like that. But now we have that, but we're not looking at, okay, what can I do to become better and create systems? It's more like, here, take this, and this should help you to slow down or do whatever it is. But it's so hard because it's an individual thing. Not everybody has it. Not everybody doesn't have it. You know, it's an individual process, and we don't have the manpower to be able to handle every single student where they're at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So let's for a moment, Laura, do you want to make any comments based upon that, or can we go into what some of the symptoms are?
No, go into the symptoms.
All right. Again, it's an attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and some of the inattention symptoms that we find with people who truly have it are difficulty paying attention to details or concentrating on task. They can't seem to keep their mind on the task, and they get off task very easily. Making careless mistakes at school, work, or during other activities. Trouble listening when spoken to directly. And by the way, there's a lot of teachers who think that children with ADHD or teenagers and so on, that they're troublemakers, that they are just being obstinate and they can't pay attention. But I don't know how many times I have to write school systems to tell them that they're not doing it maliciously or that they are disrespectful, but they truly have a problem. And so, and then that comes across as difficulty following instructions and finishing tasks. A lot of patients that I work with cannot finish their homework no matter what they do. Losing things like keys and phones or books or other materials that you have to take to work or school, getting easily distracted by just about anything, conversations, clutter around you, cars passing by or anything, being easily distracted, and forgetfulness with daily activities, whether that's chores or appointments or errands or responsibilities and so on. And so that's pretty much the inattention part. And again, some patients have more inattention than hyperactivity, and some patients have more hyperactivity and impulsivity, and they're paying their attention is pretty good. But most patients display a combination of those things. Let me go over some of the, any questions so far? Can I go over the hyperactivity part of it?
Sure.
The hyperactivity is the fidgeting, the tapping the hands or the feet, squirming while seated, playing with the hair, playing with the clothing, and so on, rather than giving good eye contact and good attention to who, whatever they're involved with. Moving around when expected to remain seated, such as in a classroom or office. Like our little boys, Joseph, that are in school, man, I kind of feel sorry for them, but they probably want to get out and run around and expend some energy. So I like your idea of coming to homeroom and then going to recess. Maybe we ought to make them run a couple miles first.
That's right.
Feeling restless or on the go constantly, talking excessively. Now, if you have a person who talks excessively, that could be another symptom of another diagnosis. So we have to be careful how we go there. And the method in diagnosing a person, if they have a lot of these behavior patterns, then we can conclusively diagnose them with ADHD. But just a random talking excessively, and we can't do that. A lot of people, again, as I mentioned, they go to the physicians and they can't concentrate, and automatically ADHD label is put on them, when that could be not the truth. Difficulty doing quiet activities. A lot of ADHD patients want to try to do their homework, but they got the TV blaring, they got their little earbuds in playing music, and they got this and they got this, and just a lot of things going on at one time. And impulsivity is a big problem with ADHD patients. A lot of impulsive decisions or actions or risky behavior in some cases, but that impulsivity comes across as blurting out answers before a question is completed. I don't know if you guys had people in your classroom when you were in high school that kind of blurted out the answers. Having trouble waiting your turn in line or in conversations. And this might explain some of the road rage stuff, right? People get so frustrated. They don't want to wait in the traffic jams and lines and whatnot. Interrupting and intruding on others' conversations or activities is a hallmark feature of impulsivity. When somebody butts in or crowds out your conversation and so on. Making snap decisions without fully thinking things through. Now, that could be a feature of another diagnosis too, so we have to be careful. We have to, when we work with somebody and you're evaluating yourself, you have to have probably 7 or 8 of these characteristics in the different categories, the inattention, the hyperactivity, the impulsivity, not 1 or 2. You know, we can all have 1 or 2 based upon a bad day or lack of concentration. But if you see a pattern and there's 7 or 8 or 9 of these characteristics out of about 20 possibilities, then you probably have ADHD. But it doesn't mean you have to go to the modern psychiatric route of getting the stimulants as medication, and which are highly addictive and all that. There are other routes. There's holistic routes, naturopathic routes, changing your nutrition, all kinds of other alternatives. And so on. Difficulty resisting temptation, always falling prey to what they're being tempted by. That's another impulsivity kind of a characteristic. And so these are kind of hallmark features. So if you're sitting there, oh my God, he's explaining me, then you probably need to get some help from a counselor or probably a counselor who can direct you, who can verify the ADHD diagnosis and then what you want to do based upon your faith, based upon your ethics. Some people, for example, their faith does not allow them to take medication. And so what do we do then? And like Laura reiterated a few minutes ago, everything needs to be considered in a holistic kind of way. The nutrition, the bedtime routines, the family systems, everything needs to be weighed, and kind of we need to figure out a solution based upon all those elements, not just a singular element. Here's a medication. Good luck. That's not adequate.
No, because I listen to all of the symptoms that you give us that are like a roadmap. And I think about the words that Joseph said, we have to learn how to learn. And so there is this responsibility on the person who has legitimately ADHD, or the responsibility to teach their child or whoever it is in their life that is dealing with ADHD, you know, how to learn, right? How to manage. Because otherwise, like you say, it can become this free-for-all. Like, you know, this is the way I am. But the reality is that is chaos, right? And I'm sure the person living inside the body of ADHD feels that chaos, which is why they appreciate oftentimes being put on the medication, even though most medication makes them feel tired and, you know, dumbed down is what I've heard. I do have a question. I've always been, you know, curious about this. When it comes to ADHD, I know that in children, we're typically looking for the hyperactivity, right? Mm-hmm. Which again, can be confusing because children often are, you know, back to what you and Joseph addressed, and I completely agree with, which is our educational system is broken, mm-hmm. right? Children are expected to sit still and quiet, you know, in the most, you know, explosive, impulsive times of their life. You know, they got mm-hmm. so much energy, right? And we're asking them to contain it, right? I'd like somebody to make me sit down for 8 hours. You know, yeah. it's like we got right. it backwards.
yeah.
You know, but I'm curious, you know, Kevin, that when I think of ADHD in a child, I think of all of the symptoms you gave, right? But is it possible that a person can have ADHD and it just be in their mind, that it's not showing up on the outside, but their mind is constantly in a whirl? Or will it show up on the outside what's happening on the inside?
It's going to eventually show up on the outside what's going on in the mind. It's it could be psychosomatic, which is in the mind, so to speak, or it's usually an outward behavioral set of symptoms that we can look at, we can observe. It shows up behaviorally, it shows up with attitude. And the other, so I think it's more outward, you know, it's not psychosomatic, so to speak.
But can I just clarify?
Sure.
Because I've heard people say, you know, like my mind never shuts off. You know, I can't concentrate on any one thing, but looking at them from the outside, it might look like they have it all together, but to hear, as in, I'm talking about adults, you know, I don't know if they've just learned to manage the outward things. I'm just really curious that can an adult, not a child, but can mm-hmm. an adult actually appear to be, you know, non-ADHD on the outside, but inwardly their mind is completely chaos? Or is it again, and it makes sense that the inward would begin to show up on the outward?
Can I ask a clarifying sure. question? Sure. Laura, is it mainly females or males that are saying that their mind is racing that you're talking to?
I think males.
Really?
Males, okay. yeah.
Because I hear mm-hmm. a lot of females say, my mind's always going. I have a lot of things in my mind and all that. Because with our male minds, we can say, you know, you can ask, what are you thinking about? And they're like, nothing. And they're like, really? How does that work? And it's not really nothing. It could be that we're just kind of lost in thought. We're not thinking about, did I do this? Or is this something that I need to do or anything like that? I just want to clarify, but go ahead, Kevin.
Well, a lot of times the ADHD is not a lot of things going on in the mind. It's just, they can't concentrate on, maybe they only have four things. They can't even concentrate on that. What you're talking about, Laura, if I had a patient tell me that kind of information, I would be concerned with a mood disorder that one of the hallmark features is a racing mind. They can't settle their mind down. They can't concentrate on one thing. They're jumping from one to another and so on. And so I'm not saying ADHD people can't do that, but they just can't. They could have two or three things going on and not even pay attention to that. They could have one thing going on, a piano lesson, and they can't focus. Forget about, and it's not because they have 14 other thoughts. It's because they're bored stiff. And so I think I would be investigating if a person can't settle their brain down, that either they have a caffeine intoxication or drinking too many. Well, I'm not going to say the product's name. I don't want that, but caffeinated stuff, or they have a bipolar or another mood disorder that doesn't allow them to quieten their brain down. Does that help?
Yes, that's very helpful. So, yeah. Well, you said bipolar or another. What would be another thing that you would investigate?
Anxiety. A mood disorder can be a bipolar or any number of anxiety disorders. And so a person who is worried about so many things that they can't sort that out, they're just overthinking, over-worrying, over-mulling over whatever is bothering them. Now, a bipolar mind jumps, man. They can't quieten their minds down when they go to sleep, and that interferes with their sleep. And it's tricky. So when we talk to a person, or you're a person listening to this podcast is out there, you pretty much just can't jump to conclusions. You have to really examine it over a period of time, because there's so many nuances and so many differentials that we have to study. So if somebody told me their mind, they just can't quieten their mind down and it's jumping everywhere, and they think they're ADHD, that lack of concentration can show up in late ADHD, but it also can show up in bipolar disorder. But the difference in the bipolar is they can't quiet their minds down and they keep jumping. Whereas the analogy I used about the little boy in piano lesson, he's only got one thing on his mind, but he can't pay attention. And so, you know what I mean? Hope that helps.
Really helpful. Yeah. Thank you.
So I would start investigating and asking other questions, kind of on the download, not to get the person to think, oh my God, he's doing a bipolar assessment. No, I would just ask other questions and start to differentiate a little bit. And if those differentiation questions start to be affirmed, then it leads me more down the path of bipolar rather than the ADHD. But that just comes with experience and knowing what questions to ask.
And I just want the listener to understand too that, you know, this is why I love this podcast, right? Is that I don't have to know everything, because I know people that do know what I don't know. And Kevin and I, you know, we have worked together. I have worked with clients that I have connected to him to do an assessment. Why? Because I'm not trained to do an assessment. I don't take on clients, for instance, that have mood disorders or, you know, anxiety. I'm not trained in that. But I do love that Joseph, Kevin, and I have similar skills, but we also are very different, and that I have and will continue to, when I'm not sure that a client is doing well, you know, emotionally, might have a mood disorder, I have set up an appointment, a three-way appointment, or sometimes a two-way appointment. So I just want the listener to know that, you know, whoever, even if you're meeting with a therapist, not everybody knows everything. And if you don't feel like you're getting somewhere, right, you can ask them if they can give you an additional resource to do an assessment, because I have found that this is something you provide, Kevin, that's really, really helpful.
I want the parents to understand that they have a child that they feel like is being challenged by ADHD, that child probably is not doing it on purpose or is not being malicious when they have poor school performance, or they can't focus on their chores, or they can't seem to be compliant with the family norms. They're not necessarily doing it because they're malicious, or they disrespect the parents, or and so on. They're not trying to be difficult on purpose. And so I know as a parent, we can become ill at our children because we don't think they are showing respect, or they don't care about what we're instructing them to do. But I just want the parents to take a deep breath. And this ADHD may not be proportional to their parenting style, so don't take it personally. Let's just get to a solution and try to work on it instead of jumping to conclusions. And so we can jump to conclusions about our children and box them in and almost put a label on them that is hard for them characterologically to overcome. And so we can discourage them not meaning to. And so it's very tricky. So you need a professional to help you diagnose it, but also to help you create some solutions. You know, the solutions may not be as hard as you think. We could take the phones away at 7:30 and there you go, and create some good bedtime routines and stop the sodas and improve our nutrition. That could be all they need. They may not need medication. And so, but I also want the audience to know that ADHD can show up in adults as well. And then it shows up in strained relationships, work problems. I also want the audience to know that we have found that 50% of ADHD patients have an oppositional disorder. They have an oppositional disorder. They'd be darned if they're going to have anybody tell them what to do. They're not going to be compliant generally to well-established rules and laws. There's going to be an oppositional problem. They don't want anybody to tell them what to do, from pastor to police officers. I mean, you know, to government officials, to anything, work rules. They just have an oppositional state, which comes across as negativity and all kinds of things. So if you're a person like that and you don't understand where it comes from, then maybe it's coming from an ADHD basis. Who knows? And I think what we see is that oppositional disorder as an outgrowth of ADHD is usually expressed towards female authority figures. And so that means teachers, principals, mothers, grandmothers, aunts, and so on. And especially in little boys. And it's fascinating. The problem is that they're oppositional towards female authority figures. And I think there's a spiritual thing involved here, you know. And I think I've even expressed this on one of our podcasts before, that a mother or a lady represents the church. And so in the Bible, and so if our enemy can get these children who have ADHD diagnoses and 50% of them being oppositional, if he can get them being oppositional towards female authority figures, then it's going to be not too hard at all to get him to go out of the church and not respect the church as the mother figure, as the mother female authority figure, so to speak. I, it's a spiritual thing. I think he's just setting kids up to disrespect the church.
Join us next week for part two. Thank you for listening to the Encouragement Now podcast. For more information about us, what we're doing, and how you can support our ministry, please go to encouragementnowministries.com. Your support can help change lives.